just a little over 2 weeks ago that I and many of us learned of the death of Rick Manson, our Unitarian Universalist, troubadour minister for the past 40 years. I very much appreciated Anya reading his poem, Think of Me as Music, for our words for reflection on May the 11th, the Sunday morning after Rick's passing. Also, as many of you know, Rick and I became very good friends over the past about 8 to 10 years, and told the story of his amazing ministry in a book we collaborated on. In just a few weeks, our association, Skinner House Press, will be publishing a collection of his poems called Going Out Dancing, and I was honored to be asked to write the introduction to it. 2 Sundays ago, I was still in the immediate aftermath of the news of Rick's death and didn't feel quite ready to speak to it in any kind of detail at that service. Besides, I already had a prepared sermon in place. Last Sunday, we had that remarkable, wonderful, a ropes service. So I decided on this Sunday I would include a tribute to Rick as part of my overall thoughts on this Memorial Day Sunday weekend. Last fall, Rick and I were working on a proposal to the General Assembly Planning Committee to have a tribute to his 40-year ministry held at our upcoming UUA's General Assembly next month. As things have turned out, his memorial service will be held on June the 20th, which is Rick's birthday. It will take place while our General Assembly is in session. As another Unitarian Universalist, the late Kurt Vonnegut, would have said, so it goes. And that's a sentiment Rick himself would appreciate. I'm going to read just a portion of one of his poems. Called a minister, as a way of framing up my Memorial Day meditation for the morning. I also cite this poem in the introduction to Going Out Dancing. The specific experience that Rick is writing about in the longer poem was being asked to conduct a memorial service for someone he did not know, and who in this case had very tragically committed suicide. But just the snippet I'm going to read has a much broader dimension to it than that. A pebble does not enter a pond without creating a ripple, moving out and in time touching every single shore. We are all, every one of us, in this thing together. Nothing is lost. Nothing is wasted. None of us, not one of us, is that alone. I really like the imagery that's contained in those few lines, and I give it to you as sort of my metaphor for the morning here. Think of your life, think of any life, as a pebble that is dropped into a pond at the moment of birth. The ripples immediately begin to move out, and the shore, or the shores that Rick refers to, are the many other lives that the ripples of your life reaches. The clear point of the poem, of course, is that not even death stops the movement of the ripples of a life a person's life generates. They continue to reach other shores, even from one generation to the next. This, indeed, actually is one of the better metaphors I have come across for life after death, or even eternal life. The lives that each of us are living are also setting off a larger chain of life events, a succession of ripples that, in one way or another, we're going to keep on flowing, keep on going, keep on reaching shores for as long as life itself is present on this earth. And I find that a comforting, a joyful, as well as a somewhat sobering thought. It is comforting to know that the impact of our lives is not contained only to the time we are given to live them. The combination of joyful and sobering part is when we think or reflect or meditate upon the kinds of ripples we are sending out to the shores they reach. Which of our ripples do we take joy and satisfaction in sending forth? And are there some we would just as soon have never sent out at all? If your life is anything like mine in this regard, it's probably some of both. I'll come back later to what I see as being some of the ripples from Rick Manson's life, but for the next few minutes, Let's think about some of our own. I couldn't tell you at this point in my life how many funeral or memorial services I've led over the past 35 plus years. I know it's got to be somewhere in the hundreds. So I also can't tell you how many life stories I've listened to in preparing for those services. And while each of those stories I hear is, of course, unique to the person who has passed away, I've also been able to pick up on some common themes, some common threads that run through many of them. And so staying with our master metaphor for the morning, each person's ripples are unique to him or her. But I also find that when I step back from them a bit, I see certain resemblances. So I'd like to speak for the next few moments to some of those common themes. And if it's not too morbid of a thought, as I hope and trust it isn't, you can consider this a sneak peek into the kinds of things that those who help plan your memorial service are most likely going to talk about. One of the things I am the most struck by in the kinds of conversations I've just mentioned is really how little I hear about how a person made his or her living, or how much money they made, or how much wealth they acquired. One reason I find that kind of striking is because we devote of necessity so much of our time to this thing we call making a living, which we have to do. Well, yeah, the family may want the person's occupation mentioned. They may want the company, if it was a long-time relationship with a company, they will probably want something said about that. But if it goes beyond that, it's usually to take note of what the person meant to his or her co-workers. Or in a people profession like teacher or nurse, doctor, counselor, politician, community organizer, go down the list. The emphasis there is always upon what the person meant to the individuals to whom he related, or to whom she extended herself as a member of that occupation or profession, rather than how well he or she fulfilled the requirements of the job. Practically every conversation I've had in preparing a memorial service has borne out the truth of the statement by Winston Churchill, who said, "We make a living by what we give. We make a life by what we give." As just noted, I hear very little about what a person got or acquired over the course of a lifetime. Nearly everything I hear instead is about what they gave. The children want to talk about what kind of parent or grandparent a person was. They want it pointed out what the person gave to his or her community. They want mentioned the things they were most devoted to, the things they felt the most passionate about and committed to. Again, think of ripples. The ones that reach the shores of other lives are the ones that have to do with how you gave it yourself, what some of your strongest passions were. Just to give one example on this point, I recall a service I did for someone who was instrumental in starting and promoting softball league programs and tennis tournaments here in the city of Nashua. And I heard about all the tournaments he had gotten the city to host and the teams that he had taken to these out-of-town tournaments. This man's job was barely mentioned by his sons or daughters, but his passions were softball and tennis. So whatever you feel the most passionate about, whether it's anything to do with your job or not, that's what's going to show through. Those are the ripples that are going to be remembered. Along with remembering the things you were most passionate about, I know a number of occasions where the kind of vision someone had for the kind of world they wanted to live in, they wanted to pass along, and what kind of time they devoted to that vision, that's something that also gets noted. Our Second Unitarian Universalist principle says that we affirm and promote justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. The ways in which you gave of yourself on behalf of these three things will be much noted. Another of your life ripples, believe it or not, will have to do with how well you made people laugh. And I don't necessarily mean how good your jokes were, because I certainly wouldn't want to be held to that myself. But rather, I mean the things you did to lift and to lighten people's spirits. More often than not, in my conversations with family and friends, they're going to want some kind of a funny incident or amusing trait recalled about the person who has passed on. And I know some of that, to be sure, is for the purpose of bringing some levity into the midst of the grief. It's really a way of offsetting
the grief that is being experienced, but I think it also runs far deeper than that. We're remembered for the joy we brought into people's lives, how we lifted their spirits,
how we helped them
to laugh at life, even as they take it seriously. It's an extremely rare conversation I have about a deceased person where at some point some laughter does not come forth.
Yet another
life ripple that will be noted is how at home you were with yourself.
How well you conveyed
the sense of knowing
who you were.
How much self-respect. How much self-acceptance you had. Some phrases I've heard spoken in a very approving and admiring way along this line are,
"She always let you know, or she always let you know where you stood with her." He was pretty clear with himself about who he was and what he wanted. She could easily listen to others because she was so well grounded herself. He didn't feel he had to prove himself all that much because he had an inner kind of self-confidence. These are all lines I've heard in conversations about how the ripples of a person's life have touched the shore. Still another ripple. Brace yourself for this one. This will have to do with how religious you were. I find a bit of an irony, even take a little amusement from the fact that I seem to be the one whose phone number is in the files of our local funeral directors when they get a request for a minister if the deceased is someone who is, quote, not a very religious person. Family comes in, says, well, our
father, mother,
whoever they're having the service for,
was not a very religious person,
but we'd like
to do the service.
The guy got that, you know. Sure. In these cases, what the family usually means is that the person was not a member of a particular religious community and usually did not adhere to a particular set of religious beliefs and practices. And at that level, I can understand and accept the phrase, not very religious. But then as the conversation goes on, I'll be told about how this person
loved and revered life, or sacred living,
or felt close to the earth and respected it and its creatures. I'll hear about someone who could have a sense of awe and wonder and mystery at the larger light that's all around us. And as that conversation goes forth, I end up thinking to myself, even though I rarely say it out loud, well, she or he sounds pretty religious to me. My often cited definition of religion, which I got from Forest Church, is that it is our human response to the dual reality of being alive and knowing that we will die. I've cited that very often. I always follow up by saying it's not the only viable definition of religion that's out there, but it's still a pretty good one. And it's one that comes to my mind when I hear about the various religious traits that a supposedly non-religious person had. Religion is our response to life. It is the ways we seek connection with life and with those with whom we share this life on earth. It's the ways we discover and extract meaning from life. It's the ways we find the will and the strength to say yes to life in the face of the reality that it is not ours forever. More times than I can ever recount, I've heard the statement, well, Mom or Dad wasn't a very religious person, but, and then everything that comes on the other side of that but tells me just how much of a religious person they really were. So let's recall the ripples once more. The ways you gave up yourself, the things you felt the most passionate about and committed to, how you lifted the spirits and brought joy to the lives of others, and how well you responded to the life that you were given and the time you were given to live it. The question each of you can only answer for yourself, of course, is how strong are these kinds of ripples for you? How many shores are they reaching? Well, now, I think I have milked Rick Mastin's ripple metaphor for practically all it's worth, so I'm going to switch off to another one. The one for which he's best known, and that became his trademark, I guess now you would call it his brand, for much of his life. You'll be remembered
for how well you danced.
By that I most emphatically do not mean how well you may have mastered any particular set of dance steps or moves. If that's the criteria, my life up to this point has been an abject failure. By dance, I simply mean how well, how gracefully you move through life. Using some of the lines from Rick's signature song, how you dance is about how you encountered and lived out the good times and the bad times too. It's about how you were able to both hug the laughter and bear the pain. Rick's favorite punchline when he'd be appearing at a Unitarian Universalist church, including this one a few years ago, would be to ask the congregation to take note of a misprint in our hymnal to his Let It Be a Dance song. He said he did this deliberately so he'd have a punchline for every time he did the song. The line in the book is the line in our hymnal is printed, bear the pain, as in B-E-A-R. Rick says he meant it to be B-A-R-E, bear the pain. Meaning that we need to have people in our lives to whom we can completely open our hearts, pain and all, as well as having our hearts be open for them. That's another thing you'll be well remembered for. And so dancing is to hug the laughter and bear the pain. Dancing means to simultaneously take seriously and find great joy. In Rick's words then, let it sunshine, let it rain, hug the laughter, bear the pain, as round and round we go again, and let it be a dance. Some years after he wrote and publicized and popularized his signature song, Rick wrote an addendum to it called Dance Benediction. He read it at the close of the service that he did here in October of 2005. Here's how it goes. Yes, let it be a dance. Let life be a dance. Because we dance to dance, not to go anywhere. And let it be a dance because within the dance, we move easily with the paradox. Knowing that for every step forward, there must be a step back. And anything else would have us marching away from the music. I guess it is this one song that is Rick's single greatest gift, both to our Unitarian Universalist family as well as for all the hundreds and thousands of people who have heard it, Unitarian Universalists or not. It is by far the strongest ripple of his life that has reached countless shores. His special gift to me was what he taught me about ministry, even though I had been a minister for nearly 30 years when I first met him. I learned or relearned from Rick just what a truly religious undertaking any kind of ministry is, in the best sense of the word, religious. For it is to be a poet, an artist, a musician, a teller of stories and tales. I actually knew that already. I just hadn't met anyone to exemplify it in the way that Rick did. As he put it himself in another one of his poems where he offers yet another definition of religion. What we hear in the music hall, see in the galleries, what the poets say and dancers do, ah, this is religion. The last time he and I were together was this past January 20th at the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Monterey Peninsula in the most beautiful part of our country that was Rick's home base throughout his life. I'm glad I had one more opportunity at that time to sing Let It Be a Dance with him. And so as we think of the many ripples of Rick's life, as we think on the ripples of the lives that have touched us most deeply, as we think on the ripples we wish to leave to reach many and varied shores, let's sing Rick's song together for us. It's number 311.